In the Czech Republic, and increasingly even abroad, violinist Pavel Sporzl enjoys the kind of name recognition that some aspiring rock stars dream of. A natural talent, he became the enfant terrible of the classical music world when he first arrived on the scene, foregoing a tuxedo for a bandana and taking an interactive approach to his concerts. Having toured the world over and recorded roughly a dozen albums, 36-year-old Pavel Sporzl is not only a dominant but a defining force in classical music. I met Pavel as he was preparing for a concert and asked him to describe what it is that made him and his career so distinct.
Well, first of all, really, I always try to play the best violin I could. I was thinking of doing the violin or concert business a little bit in different way than usual. So I decided not to play in tails. I played just in trousers and shirt and took a bandana around my head. And I tried to be as close as the young public as possible. I wanted to show them that that actually young person can also play classical music, and that they don't have to be worried to go to the concerts, and they don't have to be worried to listen to the classical music. And I think that's what made the difference. Now I don't play in bandana anymore, but I have a blue violin. Again, a thing which I try to a little bit in my way change the classical scene, you know. And I think that's the thing which makes me different. That's what I want to do.
And so you started very, very young. Can you tell me something about how your relationship to music developed over the many years?
Well, I always loved the classical music, actually. We listened to it in our home. We also listened to some pop music like Beatles or ABBA. But the major thing in my family was the classical music. And since I was five, I listened to it, and I loved it, and I still love it.
But did that love, like, change, grow deeper, evolve over the years, or would you still say it's kind of a childish love?
No, of course it deepened. As every other child, I loved very fast compositions, you know. Nowadays, I like even the slower ones. So, of course, it developed, and I listened to more recordings and more compositions. So, when I was little, I knew mostly Tchaikovsky and Dvořák, and now, of course, I know many, many more composers. I play a lot of stuff of new music, the 20th century's music, and of course, it developed like I developed myself.
You've done a lot of work with children, and you've gotten a lot of good reactions for what you've done with young listeners. Can you tell me about how you got involved in that, and give me a couple examples of your method of teaching?
I have no method. I always try to show young people that the classical music is really nice, that they don't have to be worried of listening to it. I do a lot of, let's say, educational concert. When I was in school, I went to these educational concerts, and I hated them, even although I was a violinist and was supposed to be very quiet and listen to the concert. I was the worst from my school, because I hated it. They just came there and they play some music and explained nothing, and it was so boring, really. So I tried it, I thought of changing it. I tried to talk to the students. I asked them a few questions about the music. I tried to get them involved in the concert so that it's not really just listening and boring for them. Plus, sometimes I bring another violin. I ask them if someone wants to try to play the violin, and always somebody wants. So he goes on the stage and we play some duo. He just plays the open strings, and I play some melody, you know, above. And these students who play the violin, he's like a hero in the school, you know, for 2 weeks, that everybody just adores him in the school, you know. So That's another way of just getting really attention of these students and showing them that it can be even fun to play or listen to classical music.
I don't know that you have a special relationship in particular with Dvořák, no?
I do. I actually recorded all of his compositions for violin as a solo instrument. So I recorded his concerto and all of the compositions for violin and piano. But, well, of course, as a Czech musician, I'm sort of forced to have a nice relationship with Czech composers. I try to play them as much as possible because, well, who could play them better than Czech musician? It's not only me; it's every Czech musicians, of course, feel the best way how to play the Czech composers. It's not the only way, but it's the Czech way. Dvořák had the incredible sense of melody making. If you listen to Dvořák for 10-15 seconds, you know it immediately. It's a Dvořák's music. It was very hard for him to compose. He was walking around the room for many hours and maybe many days before he knew that the one melody he just made was the right one. It was really, really hard business for him to make his compositions. So I think even to know that his compositions are very, let's say, simple. It's very great to and very easy to listen to it. But it's not simple in the bad way. I mean, all of the people in the world can really easily sit down and listen to his beautiful melodies. It's hard to explain in words. You have to listen and you get in love with it.
You recognized Dvořák immediately after the first few strains, of course, but I also wanted to ask you if you can differentiate between who's playing.
Nowadays, because you can listen to all of your colleagues immediately, the personality somehow doesn't exist in such a big way as before. So it's much harder to recognize these days who is really playing. But if you listen very carefully, you can. But really, 50-100 years ago, or 50 years ago, Jascha Heifetz was an incredible violinist. You listen two notes and you immediately know it was Jascha Heifetz. Today, it's hard to say in two notes who's playing.
It's the dream of every American musician to study in the old world. You studied in the new world. You studied in America for 4 years, I think. And I wanted to ask if you could compare and contrast the experiences of studying in old Europe and in America.
It was a dream of every East European musician to go to study to America. Before the World War II, most of the Jews went to the States or to America. They flew, so all of the best teachers were there, and they made a unique way of teaching. So the teacher is the most important person, and every teacher is different. If you talk of American teacher or an European teacher, there is no European way of teaching, and there is no really American way. It's the teacher's way. You can find great teachers in Europe, and you can find great teachers in America. I think in America you simply want a big sound more than in Europe. I think in Europe you want more the details, the musicality. In America it's more like, I don't know, trumpet way of playing in the good way, not in the bad way, of course, because simply you have big halls and everybody in the hall wants to hear your sound. I would say that's the main difference as I see it.
We play a song at the end of this program, and when I was sifting through your work to try to find a song that would really be exemplary of your talent and your taste, I realize that's a question that's best left to you. Is there one piece that really speaks to you, really touches you absolutely more than anything else, or is there something that you've really had a close relationship to ever since your childhood?
There is one piece of Dvořák which I listened to it since I was very, very little, and that's in one of the Dvořák CDs, it's called Mazurek. It has 5 minutes, so if you can squeeze it there, play Mazurek.
Pavel Sporzel, interviewed there by Christian Falvey, which brings us to the end of our show today here on Radio Prague, and leaves me with nothing else to say, but from me, Rosie Johnston, and the rest of the team here in Prague, it's thanks for listening, and goodbye.